Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Craft of the Draft podcast. And finally, season 2024 is, well, ended at a Coates Talent League perspective. Still got one more game to go, but grand finals were finished yesterday. Congratulations to Oakley and Sandringham, who, let's be real, were the predicted favourites all year. It was a matter if anyone could top them. And the other honesty is they were probably underwhelming grand finals. I think we wanted a little bit more out of them, but realistically, the favourites got a hold of both their opponents and won quite comfortably in the end in both games. But we'll start first with the boys' grand final, and Sandy got the job done 103-66. And yeah, it was 51-0. They just got out of the blocks. We talked about in our preview, I predicted Sandy would go on a 4 or 5 goal run and that would finish the game. They did it to start the game. So, and that was it. That was a difference. I mean, the Rebels won the game after that point when it was 51-0. And obviously the game's over and context is different. So Sandy aren't going to be putting in everything, but I don't know, what were your main takeaways? It was slightly underwhelming because you naturally lose that intensity the longer the game goes on when it's finished so quickly.
I think it was a case of GWV not having anyone probably in the midfield to really set the tone and go with Levi Ashcroft and Sam Marshall, who ran amok from a speed and spread point of view. That was probably the clear difference between the two sides. And when you look at it, GWV in each of their three finals, which preceded the grand final, for multiple periods in all of their games, they were on the back foot. It's just that their opponents were unable to punish them and put it on the scoreboard. Oakley, obviously inaccurate. Tassie in the rain, it was a low-scoring slog. And Geelong were never quite able to put them away either. Sandy's always going to put you away with the key targets they've got up forward and the midfielder's ability to kick goals. Sam Marshall, what a first quarter he played. And the future of Brisbane's in bright hands. They might have a premiership next week, but they're going to have a lot more talent coming, that's for sure.
What a joke, eh? They're in it. Well, we're recording this on the Sunday after the prelim against Geelong, and you watch that last night and you're like, wow, what a group they've got right now, and you add those two players to that list. It's quite unbelievable to think where they'll be in the next few years. But I guess what impressed you most about Marshall's game, because for me it was just his ability to really impact himself, and usually he can become an accumulator around the contest, but he's just that link in transition. Yep. This one, I felt like he was really putting his front foot forward and saying, I'm going to take this game on. I'm going to make things happen myself. I don't know. Was that the way you saw it and that made him so impactful?
And probably the fact that he was the one that really set the tone for Sandy. You have Nathaniel Sulzberger, Murphy Reid, who didn't play out the game with a minor knee injury, and also Levi Ashcroft, who all probably overshadow him in the midfield, but it was him who on grand final day was the one who really set the tone with a couple of goals in the first quarter, but also how hard he runs defensively, something you've noted a lot throughout the year, and I think that really showed on grand final day. But what was impressive from a Sandy point of view was yesterday when we were thinking about who were the best players, from my perspective, it was very hard to pick a top five. They're so well-rounded, this Sandringham lineup, and their depth is absolutely sensational. They've played 68 players throughout the year, and the 23 that took the field on grand final day really did that region justice, going back to back to back.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. I mean, the depth has just always been there. It's so consistent. And I think, like, our 5-4-3-2-1, you've got Mitch Kirkwood-Scott at 5, which talks to you about that depth, that tactical nous they've got to understand where to put players and give them the best opportunity. And just felt like there was a role for everyone that made their win so easy, so impactful. If you had to touch on a few that, we'll obviously talk on a few other top boys, but who were a few you didn't expect to really stand out as much as they did not stand out? But you know what I'm trying to say in terms of impact in little ways. Was there anyone else for you?
I think one that really impressed me was Sam Buck. I love the storyline of a player who comes in for an injured Archie Ludewig, didn't play any of the finals, kicked a couple of goals up forward and was really influential with his marking. Also went into the ruck as well, which allowed Lachie Voss to play as a full-time forward. So I really liked his game. And we talked about Mitch Kirkwood-Scott. Another one who I thought was quite good was Lenny Hoffman. Took three intercept marks, launched at the footy. We know he's really raw, but he's one who obviously did that Brighton-Sandringham double, and he was very impressive on grand final day in the back line.
The other two that made it into our top five as well, Harry Oliver, who just so tough around every marking contest that comes his way. the reliability from a player like that is so crucial in those type of games, and he's shown that time and time again. I mean, he's probably, he only averages, I think it's 15 or 16 touches a game, but everything he does, it feels like there's a lot of impact attached with every disposal. And Harry Armstrong, he always finds a way to hit the scoreboard.
Yeah.
He kicked four goals as well, and we'll cut a bit later to the podcast as well. We spoke to a few of the boys after the game, and Harry Armstrong was one of them. He spoke about his performance, but I mean, making that comparison again to Job Shanahan, do you still see Harry Armstrong? Where do you see those two in the key forward discussion?
Yeah, nothing's changed. I still see Job Shanahan as being well ahead. Harry Armstrong had a size advantage on Mitch Lloyd, and Mitch Lloyd has battled bigger opponents throughout the year, but it's very hard when the midfield's being beaten pretty comprehensively from a Rebels perspective. But yeah, we put some numbers up we put a post up on Sunday about some of these mind-boggling stats that have really propelled Sandy's success. I think one that's worth touching on the podcast is Sandy had more combine invitees missing from their premiership side through injury than seven of their Coates Talent League rivals had in total invited. So that tells you how much depth they've got. So those players that were missing, Luke Traynor through a concussion, Charlie Rosines through a hamstring injury, Jet Haida through a broken arm, Tash Houghton through an ACL, and Josh Dolan as well was missing. And then you also had some others who've been talked about in draft discussions. Ned McGuinness played throughout the year. Cooper Lords obviously now on a list. Miles Tyra will be a very good player next year. And the list goes on and on and on. It's unbelievable depth. And I guess to finish off, how strong will they be next year? They'll have Miles Tyra in the ruck. They'll have Archie Ludewick up forward, Jack Dalton and Xavier Bammett.
Well, obviously we said yesterday as well, if it wasn't for COVID, they were first at the end of when the season got cut short in 2021. So they could be four in a row. And next year, geez, scary to think. A Rebels perspective to touch on quickly. I mean, Ollie Hannaford, I think that was this season summed up in one game. You know what you're going to get. It's four quarters of consistent effort. Yes, the impact wasn't there on the scoreboard. But to be fair, it never was that much. He just had those big five or six goal games that kind of made it look like he's a massive scoring presence. He's always been good for a goal a game type of player, and it felt like he stood up there as well. Jack O was probably their barometer in terms of the midfield presence early on in that game. Reece Unwin had his moments. Floyd Burmeister continued his good end to the season, and Jonty Faure, whilst he wasn't able to hit the scoreboard, I think it was probably a result of a lack of opportunity inside 50, but he did definitely win that battle, and Adrian Cole took a few good contested marks from your perspective.
Yeah, pretty much consolidates what you said, but I think Ollie Hannaford's form is one that really benefited from GWV going on this long run. I think he's pretty likely to go in the second round now from what I've heard, and that wouldn't necessarily be as high if GWV were knocked out in the first final by Tassie. Reece Unwin as well, I think, really benefited. He had an injury-interrupted campaign but found a bit of continuity as that lively midfielder. And yeah, Jack O, he averaged 27 disposals in his last seven games when he went into the midfield. Well, really nice. Clean. And Floyd Burmeister's last two games, I think arguably in the top two or three players for GWV in both the prelim and the grand final. So maybe some question marks over his productivity, as much as there's great potential, but I feel like those last couple of games really cemented where he sits in this draft class.
Well, again, congratulations to the Rebels for getting into a grand final. First time in 27 years, and it was glad to see all their support as well. A lot of people, I think we should touch on that. A lot of people came down and supported these boys, and obviously, you know, it's not a short trip for a lot of these players. Some are coming from Warrnambool, Horsham, etc. But before we move on to the girls, as we said, we talked to a few of these players after the game. You'll have to remind me. I talked to Harry Armstrong, Adrian Cole.
I talked to Adrian Cole. I talked to Lachie Voss, and I talked to Sam Lindo, who skippered Brighton Grammar as well to the Premiership earlier.
We're going to cut now to all these audio. So enjoy listening. These are post-game interviews and capturing a bit of the emotion from the Sandy boys.
So Brighton Grammar, Sandy Dragons double. Tell us about your year.
Oh, it's been unreal. You know, the amount of special talent that I've been able to play with in such successful sides on a great coaching staff, it's been unreal, and best season ever.
Your back line at Sandy is stacked. It feels like everyone's got a clear role to play. What's it been like being a part of that?
Oh, it's been awesome. You know, we really drive on communication and taking risks and fighting to the end. And, you know, today we can just see with the 1%ers, with the spoils, and then the ones like Kirky and Harry Oliver who really, you know, show their foot, show their kicking through the corridor. So, yeah, we've all got different roles, which makes us unstoppable, I guess.
And what's it been like coming in the last 6 weeks after you spent a bit of time out, obviously playing APS footy?
Oh, I mean, the step-ups are very different. You know, at footy, there's a lot more culture and contested ball. So the adjustment was a bit of a challenge, but, I mean, it's amazing playing such successful teams. The facilities and the program at Dragons make it exceptional. So, nah, it's been awesome.
Well, tell me about the emotions and a massive performance, and I guess what was the talk going into the week and how did you execute so well?
I think it's just relying on us as a group. Like, we've come so far. Like, we, at the start of the year, like, we come together as a group and we're all rivals and then got to play with each other. And, I think all the connections we've built is just been good, and it showed off. Like, our chemistry is good and everything, so yeah, just sticking on the team things.
How'd you prep going into this week? How much did you know about Mitch Lloyd, and I guess how'd you combat that during the game, and you ended up impacting the scoreboard in a massive way?
Not too much. Like, obviously we haven't played him this year, and then I watched their game against Oakley during the week to see what their backmen are like. I wasn't too sure who was going to get me, but yeah, the I got a bit of size on him, so I could use that. Yeah.
And I guess what's the next couple of weeks look like for you leading up to the draft?
Just enjoying the prelim, go for Cat, so prelim granny, and then just a bunch of running for the combines.
After winning the premiership?
I was playing last year and worked off a big injury and, worked hard. And, you know, now I've had a good run this year. I've given it my all. You know, I've been thrown down forward, and had a pretty decent run down there in the ruck as well. Change of position, but yeah, you know, love these boys. It's great culture, great team. It's just a great day.
And how have you found the change of position the last 3 or 4 weeks? Yeah, like you said, swung from a really reliable key back up forward and ruck.
It took me probably a game to just adjust, and then I started to get the hang of it. You know, instead of, you know, defending, I'd be able to get on the lead and then just kind of roam free around the ground.
How much confidence do you have in your body now? You seem to have found a bit of continuity.
Definitely very confident in my body. You know, no niggles or anything, and really happy with where I am right now, and just keep getting better in the off season and see where next year takes me.
Obviously, just won the premiership. What are you feeling right now?
I'm just over the moon, really. It's been a long journey, you know, like over 10 months together. So, yeah, it's really good just to get the win and everyone coming together to get a good win.
What's it been like for you in particular? You've been here all year. You've seen players come in and out. How have you sort of found the continuity in the back 6 weeks of the season?
Yeah, I think it's been really good. It's really been something that stood out, I reckon. Everyone's got around each other, done a lot of connection, like, off the field, which has helped. Really good team and good connection, which has really helped the on-field result.
And playing on Jonty today, what were the key focuses? You seemed to draw him up the ground so he couldn't take contested marks and kick goals.
Yeah, he's obviously a quality player. Just had to kind of adjust to him as the game went on. But I think, yeah, big focus was just, if he takes a mark, just get him the least dangerous spots. And, it was kind of good to get the team win. Yep.
And we're back onto the girls' grand final in Oakley. They got up by 18 points in the end, and Eastern probably didn't convert as they needed to in front of goal and just with the possession they did have. But did you think the scoreline reflected the type of game? It was 18 points. Eastern kicked 2 goals late. I feel like it was closer than that.
It felt closer than that, but at the end of the day, Oakley's pressure was elite, and that is what won them the game. So I think there were 4 players for me in particular, and feel free to jump in if you think I'm missing anyone, but Chloe Bound, Charlotte Broad, Jacinta Baxter, and Maggie Marnie in the back line for Oakley, or as midfielders running defensively, is what enabled them to open up such a big lead when they only had 2 more inside 50s than Eastern throughout the day. So that's where you talk about that evenness, but it was just stoppage after stoppage in Eastern's forward 50. They weren't able to get any free run. They weren't able to get any possession. Georgie Brisbane had a couple of set shots she would have liked to have kicked. Maybe that would have changed the narrative of the game. But other than those 2 set shots, which were difficult and wide, it's hard to really think of them having too many other looks while the game was still alive in those first 3 quarters to get themselves into it.
Yeah, well, I think in Eastern's for Eastern, I mean, they had to get everything right tactically as well against a team like Oakley. Yep. You know, they've got the talent, but they do need that extra little bit. They probably weren't able to get that penetration deep inside 50. I mean, we said yesterday, Icon isn't really the venue for girls footy in terms of scoring. Like every grand final we've seen there, it's very hard to score goals. I think Oakley won it last year with 43 points. They win it this year with 37. So Eastern just needed more opportunity deep inside 50 to hit the scoreboard. Have to talk about best on ground performance from Sienna Talaridi. It was pretty obvious after quarter time, to be honest. And it was like last year as well. You just were kind of like, let's put the medal on her at halftime, let her run around with it. But that was probably the, I mean, she was the reason they won, and but it's also Easton were just playing into her hands, really.
Yeah.
Everything that went in, she was able to, it was just like she was so switched on, knew when she had to impact, get it out. Her intercepting, it was amazing.
Yeah, her read of the play is absolutely exceptional. She, positions herself so smartly and goes back to back as the best on ground in a premiership winning year for Oakley. I think what's really impressive is just that with the tools that she's got, and we're talking about it in the media box on the day, that I don't know if there's any player in the talent league that utilizes the tools that they've got and the weapons they've got as well as what Sienna Talaridi does. Plays above her size as well and takes those intercept marks. Probably a couple that come to mind are probably Sarah Howley with how hard she runs. She really uses that aerobic capacity. And I think Bella Davies is quite good with what she's got as well from the GWV Rebels. But in terms of talent at the absolute top end, she certainly is going to be one to watch for the coming years. And it was, emotional post-games as well for the Oakley Chargers to go back-to-back under coach Tyrone Vickery.
I was surprised they were so emotional. I don't know if it was you. Maybe, I don't know, when you win one the year before, I was like, oh, I'm surprised they're so emotional. But I understand it's a lot of their, it's the end of their junior careers for a lot of them. Yeah, very, that's terrific that they've gone two in a row and they're every chance to go three in a row. Zoe Curry is also the other story.
Yeah.
From the day in terms of a 16-year-old that goes out there and plays such an influential role. What did you love her about her game the most? It was just that impact on both ends in transition. She was there. She found a way to find the footy and move it well.
Yeah, well, there was a fend off in the first half where she was on the arc of 50 and then kicked it to a teammate's advantage, and that showed her power. And yeah, she's so good in and around the contest. I thought that was what was so impressive. Yeah. A really good finish to the season for her. She was very good in the prelim final in the wet last week as well. So between herself and Bailey Martin, they've already uncovered a couple of gems for the 2026 draft. So we expect that the Chargers are going to be there or thereabouts for the next couple of years as well. But so will Easton. So I think the positive for Easton is you look at their midfield next year and it's going to contain Josie Bamford as the ruck, who was Vic Metro this year, Jordan Allen, who you've been really big on, Taylor McMillan, whose pressure on the day was elite, and then Briley Anderson as well. Yep. So that core is going to all stay together and they're no doubt going to improve. I think the story on an Eastern point of view is Grace Ballany. She started the season highly regarded internally, but I think what she's produced this season has been her aerial capacity, her ability to really hurt you forward of centre, and her clearance work. And arguably that is second only to Ash Centra in the draft class. And that makes her a top 10 pick contender now off the back of what was a near perfect season.
Yeah, top 10. Yeah, I reckon she's top 20 certainty. She's definitely had the season to push that high up, and it'll be such an interesting draft without, you know, those expansion picks early. It's really wide open for Easton. One that I just want to give mention to who, I'll be honest, I was not sure. I wanted to put her as my bog prediction, but I just didn't because I just thought, will she get enough touches to get enough recognition? Was Evie Parker, who... Yeah. I thought was just there all day as a consistent runner. She understands her running patterns really well. It was just her execution at times was maybe let her down, but at times it was really elite. That vision inside 50, you know, she found Brisbane
twice
in the same spot early, twice in the game, and set up two scoring shots, which, you know, goes the other way. That's two goal assists for her. So I think it was just worth mentioned in her game and her season in general.
And I really liked Molly Patterson as well, won some really important clearances on the day. But we'll transition now into our exit meetings. We've done this the last few weeks as teams have been eliminated. Obviously, we've finished the season now, so it's the players who played in the grand final that we'll do the exit meetings for. And
it's quite a lot.
Yeah, there are quite a lot. We'll start with the Sandy Dragons, and we'll start with Bailey McKenzie. And my view on his season in a sentence would be, did the third tall forward, which Bailey McKenzie is, show enough at ground level?
What's your answer first? Oh, I'm leaning towards
50-50. I'm 50-50.
I think his impact is there. It's not like he hasn't had the impact. Yeah, it's that versatility. I wonder can you develop that at senior level? That's the question. You'd think he's... If his percentage of draftability right now, what would you have him at?
I'd say 50-50. Yeah.
Really? 50, right, 50, okay. 50. I'd have him at 40, 45.
Okay.
That's where I sit.
Yeah. Mitch Kirkwood-Scott, penetrating kick and reliable interceptor who finished the season well.
I was trying not to laugh as I recorded this yesterday. He's such an energizer. As they ran it to the ground, he's just screaming, let's go. He's that type. You love that player on your team.
Charlie Rosine's frustrating run of health between a dynamic Metro trial.
Yep.
Levi Ashcroft, star in the making.
I said at the start of the year, he's my number one. He hasn't moved off that for the whole year. Obviously, he's not going to go one, but you know what I mean.
Luke Traynor, brilliant at all levels, but concussions now a major concern.
Yeah, well, I wonder where that, you know, when you've got Alex Tarrou coming up, that's such an interesting conversation now, and that's one we'll definitely go into for sure. But for talent, you can't let him slip. Clubs can't let him slip. It's just, it's how much they want to take that risk.
Murphy Reid, he's propelled himself into top three talks and doesn't need as much of the footy as the others in that conversation to hurt you.
Oh, just... understands football that well and that silkiness you can't teach.
Adrian Cole has the ingredients.
Certainly does. It'll be developed well at St Kilda as that key back.
Sam Marshall has an unmatched work rate.
Oh, yeah, and he'll be instrumental. I wonder, imagine going into a team with that much class where you'd think Sam Marshall would walk in, but he won't.
Yep.
But he's got that class where he'll be so good the second he does go in.
Definitely. Yeah, unbelievable. Nathaniel Sulzberger, powerful and fit, but was overshadowed in a midfield of dreams.
I'd have to agree. I think the champs might have let him down just a little bit more as well.
Yep, that's a fair assessment. Lenny Hoffman, a raw interceptor who projects as an exciting package.
Yeah, he certainly does. I think we got great glimpses of it yesterday.
Harrison Oliver, here's a question for you. Is he the best left-footed defender in the crop? My answer is a commanding yes.
Oh, I'd have to be a yes. I'm a left footer myself. You have to appreciate the left footers in the competition. It'll be utilized well.
Jet Hayata, injury struck the competitive and quick utility at the wrong time.
Yeah, he was coming on at the right time, and then injury kind of messed that up. But do you reckon he? What's next for him?
I reckon he fits the bill of returning as a 19-year-old. You know, didn't play champs. Yeah. He's quite skinny still. Probably just gets overlooked in this draft would be my assessment.
Yeah, I can agree. I think he comes back.
Luke Kennedy, underrated externally, but 18 months of hard work's paid off.
Hey, Cooper Lord did it. What's stopping Luke?
Harry Armstrong, you've talked about him before. I think we really have to touch on the fact he was not selected for Vic Metro's first game. And he's now rated by some as the best key forward in the crop. Not rated by me, is that? But regardless, what a rise.
Yeah, has been a great rise. It'll just, again, be that interesting combo between him and Job Shanahan, but he produces results every time.
Yep. Josh Dolan, underrated, hardworking, high forward who plays his role well.
Yeah, would have loved to see him at the back end of the year. Shame about injury.
Same with Tash Hotton, and he has the X factor to excite.
He's a really weird one. I we have to talk about him as the season comes. As the draft nears closer, because where does he sit now in conversation? Because he was top 10 when that injury happened. So does he just move out? Oh, it's interesting, but
Floyd Burmeister moving across to the GWV Rebels. What a special talent he projects as.
Yeah, he's got that real dazzle about him when you watch him. It's just a bit that, you know, it's about time now and it all coming together.
Yep. Jack Alf, versatile, clean and fundamentally sound. It's a good launch pad.
Well, Joel Frazier 2.0, really. He'll project well at the next level.
Yeah, interesting comparison. Ollie Hannaford, hard work and talent. It's a lethal combination.
Oh, just kept going. Just simply kept going. I don't think his champs was enough to really state his case, but he just kept going, and he had those games which have now put him in a really good spot.
Definitely. Sammy Lawler, injury frustrated, but he'll be a scary prospect.
I just wonder if injury does, you know, if we're talking about Luke Trayner and concussion, does that make a difference for someone like him who, you know, his hamstring injuries as well, that's one we've seen at AFL level can haunt you down the line. So interesting.
Jonty Fall, built on 2023 and capped off, I think, his season with a final series, which he really needed to have.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. We still have those questions with certain things, but I think he's showcased that he's capable of impacting at the next level.
Would you agree that his last two or three games have mellowed those questions somewhat?
They have. They definitely have. I haven't left thinking the same things again and again, so I would agree.
And Rhys Unwin built back from injury really nicely to keep himself in contention.
I would agree. I think injury is really going to impact his chances, but he's one that you could see next year.
Moving on to the girls, Sienna Talaridi, as we talked about before, I think she just gets the most out of her skill set.
Yeah, she certainly does. She's primed herself for a top 10.
You reckon she's going that high?
Well, after yesterday, you have to two-time best on ground in the grand final. You've got a big-time player there. I think for an asset at an AFLW club, she's like perfect. Like you can build a team around, not build a team necessarily, but that's a player you know you can put in there and she will get her 20 touches a game and impact so well. And a conversation for later, but you see some of the girls from last year that got drafted, your top 10, they're only having 3 or 4 touches a game. Like they're your key mids. So I understand they take a lot of time to develop, but you take someone like Sienna Talaridi and she goes in, she makes an impact straight away.
Yeah.
Interesting conversation.
Three or four touches early in the AFLW career.
Yeah, okay, I've got you now. Yes.
Yeah. Sarah Pousty, a courageous bull ready for the AFLW.
Yeah, so tough and so strong.
Maggie Marnie, her stoppage work is above Coates Talent League level.
Yeah, it is, and her pressure as well yesterday. She finished with 14 tackles from memory.
Unbelievable. Abby Vecino, a big preseason, laid the foundation for 2024, which solidified her draft hopes.
Yeah, it certainly did. And she's got the Morris medal from last year as well to back up her cases.
Emma McDonald can't be kept out of the game.
Yeah, every time I watch her, I just wonder, like, she doesn't look massively tall, but she just has she's got such a good ability, good forward craft. And her at ground level as well, she's improved so much. So very versatile, very dangerous.
And Amy Karras-Brett, the winger, she's had a solid year without probably adding any new strings to her bow.
Yeah, it's interesting where if clubs will see her at the next level, where she takes her footy from here.
Yep. And then the Eastern girls, Georgie Brisbane performed at the right time of year.
Yeah, she certainly did. She had those quiet moments, but that Vic Metro against Allies game, she kicks 4 goals as well against Vic Country. She impacts as well. She just had to have those big games and, you know, prove she can still do it when it matters, and she did for sure.
Yeah, very appealing prospect as a key forward. Georgia Knight, an excitement package whose season had more ups than downs.
I agree. The next level's where I wonder what's her versatility and outside of that forward 50, where she's going to impact. So there's probably a few question marks that need to be answered for her still.
Yep. Stasia Stevenson, efficient and hardworking.
Yeah, glad she got up. We said in the preview, we thought, well, you watched that game, and we spoke to her dad before, and he said as well it was very swelled up. So good on her that she was able to come out and play on grand final day and overcome that.
Yeah, absolutely. Grace Ballany, the bolter.
Yeah, 100%. She's been their best all year. Be surprised if she doesn't win their BNF.
Yep, definitely. Evie Park, you talked about her before, but yeah, she's developed well with her athleticism and height, both attractive.
Yeah, you're looking at a good athlete that comes into an AFLW side with, I think, still fundamental skills that can be improved and enhanced even more.
And Grace Baba, the AFLW Academy player, she was injured early in the year, but she has an unbelievable highlights reel, but there was probably periods of concern around her defensive ability.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. It's just at the next level, she can't afford to switch off like she did yesterday at times. There was just periods where you wondered what her mindset was at times of the game, But you know, when she has those moments, she's very exciting and has a lot of upside. It's just how she translates that to the next level.
Definitely. That wraps up our exit meetings, and we've done them on all the Coates Talent League teams this year, all 13 of them, and the draft prospects within them. Obviously, there's a lot more conversations to be had in the next 7 or 8 weeks in the lead up to the boys' draft, and then the month thereafter in the lead up to the AFLW draft as well. But we will quickly touch on the under-17s game that will take place on AFL Grand Final Day. It's an annual game that takes place on the MCG and brings together the best 46 kids from around the country. And goes some way to determining the AFL Academy, but overall is a great opportunity for them to come together, train as a unit, and show their wares ahead of their top-aged season.
Yeah, it's always a fun game to watch. I was thinking about it on the way here, and I was like, is it really that impactful in terms of the decisions that get made afterwards? Because
they've had a whole season.
I think if you put too much emphasis on this game, it makes them nervous and you don't really get a great product. I think it's just the fun of it is great to watch, but I don't know how much impact it will have on the future. But yeah, I'm excited for it. And I'll let you touch on a few of the Vic players. I'm going to touch on a few of the interstate boys who we're excited to watch, but I think that have the teams come out yet?
Not the 23s. We know the squad of 46.
But no teams yet.
No teams at this stage.
We would give a tip if we did know, but we don't. But I'll pass to you. So who are your top Vic players you're excited to watch on the day?
I'll go through a few. So Louis Emmett, Sam Grealish, Noah Hibbins, Hargreaves, Riley Onley, Liam Heatherton, Tom McGawn. So I'll profile each of those really quickly. Louis Emmett, mobile ruck forward from the Oakley Chargers, who finished the season really well for them. Sam Grealish, one of the hardest workers at the Chargers. He played off half back a lot for them, really clean fundamentally. Riley Onley is a powerful midfielder, the big-bodied prototype of next year, and he got some games for Vic Metro and looked right at home. Noah Hibbins-Hargreaves played on the forward in the forward line and on the wing for Dandenong. His talent and his ability to stand up in big moments really impressed. He's certainly got some silkiness about him. Liam Heatherton, really good overhead, came on late in the season for Murray, and to do it in a forward line that has some key targets like Josh Murphy and the Whitlock twins, really impressive. And Tom McGawn, one of the smartest players in the draft, so good around stoppage. He's a diminutive player, but he's got a lot of upside about him when he grows into his frame. Won the premiership with Keilor's senior side on the weekend as well.
Yeah, they won by, didn't they win by like 60 points?
Yeah.
Wow. Powerhouse there. I'll run through some of the interstate boys. I mean, the two big ones to watch is Dyson Sharp and Zeke Ewland in terms of top five projected next year. Both have exciting upside. Dyson Sharp, I mean, he was one of their best for SA in the champs this year as a bottom major, and Zeke Ewell, and we know that presence off halfback, got an electric, you know, that really silky left foot kick on him as well. Taj Murray from the NT, tall ruck, he's got a bit of potential. He plays in the sample during the year for North Adelaide, so one that comes down for a majority of the season. Blake Kelly from WA had a really prolific champs for Western Australia, and excited to see how he goes as on the win as well. Had a few good moments this year. Cody Curtin as well from WA, one that I loved watching. He obviously, his brother Dan is at Adelaide at the moment, and they play very similar role. Key back, and thought he was very influential during the championships this year. Noah Chamberlain, the Swans Academy product, is very good off halfback. A nice kick, rebounds quite well. So Sydney will be keeping their eye on him. And those are probably the main ones that I'll want to bring up. Charlie Banfield's the last one in terms of a father-son there. And Kalani White, two father-sons to watch next year.
Bo Adensel also in the mix is a Gold Coast Academy product.
Dan Annable.
Yeah.
That's a lot. I didn't want to go through all of them, but there's some good players there.
Yeah, I think he played some very good VFL throughout the year, Bo Adensel. And should just note as well, Liam Heatherton is actually a New South Wales boy who'll represent the Allies next year. So, yeah, they're the main ones. And also to keep an eye out for Archie Ludewijk. Hopefully he can get up for that game next week. Obviously, like we talked about, he missed the grand final through a little bit of a back injury, but we'll wait and see. And hopefully he plays on AFL grand final day in that game.
Yeah, certainly hope he does. To wrap up, who's winning the grand final this weekend, Sydney or Brisbane? Tip?
Sydney's been the benchmark all year. I'm going Sydney.
Yeah, for the Lions to back up the
couple of big comebacks.
My thing is, look, if you've gotten that far, you don't care about the last 3 weeks. You're just there on the day. I do think Sydney prevail by 7. What's your exact tip?
26. And I'll go Errol Goulden for Norm Smith.
I'll go Isaac Heaney to cap off that final series with a Norm Smith medal. But that is all for this week. We will be back next week to recap the under 17 grand final day and give our best sons and a bit of an analysis from that. But from now on, it's draft time content. These podcasts will be more about talking points and a bit more player by player kind of breakdowns rather than obviously going through games. So come and join us up until the draft. There'll be a whole heap of content on our social medias coming out with a lot more visual graphics that demonstrate these players' years. So thank you all for watching. Congratulations to Sandy and Oakley for winning the 2024 Coates League seasons, and congrats to all players involved in the season as well. Pleasure covering it as always. Thank you all for watching, and we'll see you in the next episode.